Time for another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, who also works out of the Rotary Gardens in Janesville, Wisconsin. Pleased to have him along. And certainly, if you have some questions about your flowers or your vegetables or maybe your trees or your lawn or your shrubs, we can get into all those things with Mike. So give us a call. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. Mike Maddox, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Good to see you again.
What's going on at the Rotary Gardens these days? How's it look?
Looks good, but we have irrigation.
Yeah,
it's looking really good. If anybody hasn't been down there, right now is a great time to make that trip down to Rock County and stop in at Janesville. If you're looking for an excuse, I'll just throw this out there right now. August 18th from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. is our second annual heirloom vegetable festival where we'll have tomato taste testing, pepper taste testing. We'll have actually a small taste of kind of thing going on with some of the area restaurants being down there. We'll have education classes with the Herb Society. Master Gardeners will be there, and we'll also be doing our fried green tomato taste testing as well, too. There'll be a lot going on, and it's free. Let me repeat that, free. So just come on down.
And it's, again, give me the date.
August 18th.
August 18th from
1 to 5. Yeah, we've got everything on the Rotary Gardens website, so rotarygardens.org.
What if I have a plant that's half dead and I want to know what's causing it? Can I bring a leaf or something?
You know, don't bring a leaf. Bring a little more than that. But yeah, I'll be on hand to answer questions. Master Gardeners will be on hand to answer questions. It's just a good, fun kind of field day horticulture fair for people to come down and hang out, talk to other folks, taste some food.
What could be better? And it's free.
Yeah, it's free.
Darren in Eau Claire has a question for you, so let's go to Darren. Hi, Darren.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I'm creating a new perennial bed, and instead of bringing in organic matter to the whole site, I'm wondering if it's okay if I can put in compost with each perennial and shrub that I plant, or if that creates some danger with the shrubs not, or with the roots not spreading out properly.
Well, Darren, knowing your yard, because I do know you there, Darren. You'll probably be better coming in with a broadcast of compost throughout the area. Don't amend your little planting hole, because then it's just going to make a little sink for all the moisture in that. Whatever you can do to invite those roots out into the surrounding area will be beneficial to the planting.
So if it's on a site with turf, just spread it out to the top of the surface?
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, you're trying to sneak that one in there, Darren. I busted you.
Thanks a lot for calling, Darren. Rita in Wausau. Hi to you.
Hi to both of you. I have a question about our raspberries. We have had a very prolific little raspberry patch, about 7-8 plants over the last 4 or 5 years, and this year we hardly get a cup every 3 days, and they're everbearings, and they have always gone through the first hard frost, and we do water the garden, and what's wrong?
When was the last time you fertilized?
Oh, I think about 2 or 3 years ago.
You should be doing annual applications in the spring before growth really gets going, and that will help give them a boost to keep them going. Stay on top of watering as while you're at it. But if they're losing that kind of vigor in production, you may want to just first try the fertilizer application, you know.
What type?
10, I'm just going to tell you 10-10-10 right now. Okay. But you may want to go with something a little higher in potassium and phosphorus if you got it. Just right now, if you haven't been fertilizing, anything's going to probably be beneficial to you.
We could even fertilize now.
I'd still like to say in the spring. Okay. Because you maybe an application this late in the season will cause a flush that won't harden off for the upcoming fall. Okay. It's recommended in the spring, if I remember the publication correctly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rita. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Jim in Madison, you are next. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Quick question.
Sure.
I'm wondering how, like, an operation as big as, like, Rotary Gardens and places like that, if you have this problem to the same extent that we seem to in Madison, deal with Japanese beetles?
We complain a lot.
Okay.
That seems to be our number one thing we do in regards to Japanese beetle is complain a lot. We do have Japanese beetles there, and what we've noticed over the seasons, years, is that they're attacking ebbs and flows. This year for Rotary Gardens, it's been a relatively low assault of Japanese beetles. We had a couple here and there, not compared to like what we've had in the past. But there's other areas in Rock County and in Janesville where I swear people, they've never heard of Japanese beetle before, and it's the first time they've got them, and they think it's the end of the world. And I'm thinking, well, this is the way we were, you know, 2-3 years ago when we first got them.
Yeah, we've got plenty in Madison.
Yeah. So right now at Rotary Gardens, we do nothing for Japanese beetle control. We, do I dare say we're organic by neglect? We ignore the problems, thus we don't treat them with any chemicals. But I don't recommend that for the average homeowner. You know, you do have possibilities if your yards are smaller. And a lot for Japanese beetle depends on what it's attacking.
Okay, well, I've tried one of the organic products from, you know, one of the big organic online or catalog places, and its main ingredients say that they are pyrethrins and canola oil. And I thought initially it was working, but now lately I'll go out at night and literally remove hundreds of Japanese beetles off of rows of shern.
Yeah.
So I guess that's not the answer, but I mainly just knock them into soapy water, but that's kind of a...
That's probably the best organic solution you have is just that physical removal and plopping them into soapy water. The way I advise people with Japanese beetle is we're never going to best them with our current weaponry out there. What we need to do is take a defensive approach to Japanese beetle control, and that is whatever they're attacking, you defend that plant. And, you know, you can do that by whatever lands on it. You do hand remove it. There are a variety of sprays out there, pesticides, organic or not, that you can choose from. And their application should be made according to their label and recommendations. But protecting the plant is going to be your best strategy to take, be it turf, be it vegetables, be it trees or your flowers or shrubs. Protecting the plant will be the first thing you need to do.
Thanks much.
Thanks much for calling. Appreciate it. They are out in force in the Madison area.
You know, and this has been a topic of conversation. This is on what my colleagues and I across the state have been dealing with. And some places, I said, are worse than others this year. My own yard, last year and the year before, they've been really bad. But last fall, I treated with the imidacloprid-type products for my trees, and my damage is my birches and lindens are very minimal this year. I also credit my neighbors on either side of me, a couple houses, they have the Japanese beetle trap, so they're attracting all the beetles away from my property. And so I salute you, Ken, for keeping those up.
All right. Lynn in Menominee, I believe, is next. Lynn, hello.
Well, hello. You're exactly right. It is Menominee. Well, first of all, I was going to comment, too, on the raspberry dilemma the other lady had. We had the same trouble, is that this first crop of raspberries just didn't yield as well. It looks like the everbearing crop is going to be wonderful, and my folks had the same trouble, so I don't know what it is. Maybe we all need to just fertilize. But I have two questions. The first one is, I've got a hanging petunia basket that when I bought it in May, it was beautiful, and the flowers are still real pretty, but what's happened is the greenery has gotten a real light color, and it just doesn't look healthy.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering what I should do.
Well, we actually have a problem with that with some of our petunia baskets at the gardens right now. And what we did was we took them down, we took them out of main sight, we pruned them way back and given them a little dose of fertilizer to kind of give them a sprucing up. Sometimes our annual baskets can get like that. And, you know, we're almost to the end of the season. You can really work to try to stretch them to the end. Or, you know, as I just read in some magazine, it said, you know, it's okay to start over at this time of year because they're on sale.
Yeah,
to really do that. But, you know, you might want to take it down, prune them back, give it some fertilizer if you haven't already. Maybe check the soil. One of our theories for our baskets that we have there is they've possibly been overwatered, believe that or not.
Right.
And that might have caused some root issues that are leading to the symptoms we see. So play around with it and see what happens.
A little fertilizer wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, I'm hoping you've been fertilizing them all along. I've noticed with petunia, sometimes just the cultivar just kind of wimps out on you.
I think so. They just get to looking kind of tired.
Yeah.
And but I'm wondering, so they won't come back to flower again yet this season, do you suppose?
They might. I mean, plants are, they're living things. They can respond in many different ways. I mean, they can die on you. But the possibility of flower. I mean, your other option is keep some tired-looking petunias hanging in a basket.
Oh, I know it. Well, and it's been so hot, too. Mm-hmm. I wondered if that had anything to do with it.
Probably does play a part.
And then I have another quick question. Mm-hmm. What does a person do about quack grass?
Complain, just like Japanese beetle. quack grass is, I've got it in my lawn, so I got Japanese beetle. Quack grass, you name it, I probably got it, too. When you talk to John Steyer, our turf specialist, he says probably the easiest way to control it's to move. So I steal that joke from John. Using some sort of glyphosate product like Roundup, broad spectrum herbicide, will kill it. But with a Roundup application, it'll kill everything it touches.
Right.
So what I do is I have my bottle of Roundup. I have an empty little plastic container, and then I have two of those really cheapy foam paint brushes.
Yeah.
And I'm the guy in the neighborhood that's out there in the yard painting Roundup onto my quack grass where I find it. And so what I'm doing is I'm using that very non-selective product in a very targeted way. And what you can find with quack grass, if it's in your lawn, is after you mow, it'll have a spurt of growth faster than what your normal grass will be. And so it'll be a little higher, so you could tackle it that way.
Well, to be honest, we live on a farm, and I don't care about the quack grass on the lawn. I care about it in my perennial bed in my vegetables.
Well, that's easier then, because you have space. Just come in with that
Roundup.
Yeah, come in with the paintbrush method, and then just carefully apply it onto the blades that are coming up there.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Lynn. Thanks.
And in the country, you don't have to worry about your neighbors making fun of you either.
All right, Mary in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Mary. Mary, are you there? Mary is.
She's driving somewhere.
She was on a cell phone, and I'll bet she's not hearing us. So we'll go to Jack in Ogdenburg. Hi, Jack.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have a 30, 40 foot. Blue spruce, beautiful shape, but it's like it's thinning out and dying on the bottom. As it goes up, it gets thinner.
Yep.
And I'm wondering what I can do to get that to fill out.
You can't.
Ouch.
It's. I mean, if there was an effective way to do a comb over on a blue spruce, I tell you. But when they get that size, you will notice, and this is for a variety of reasons, they will lose their needles on their lower branches.
Okay.
And it can be from shading out. It can be from a variety of diseases. But what you've done is you've started the skirting process where it's just going to keep raising that lower canopy to keep it clean. And some people like the look of that, other people don't.
Yeah.
So that is one of the drawbacks with blue spruce, is they make a beautiful small tree.
Yep.
But as they grow up, they start to, that 20-year-old age is about that when they start doing that. So.
Unfortunately, Jack.
Yeah. That's why when people say they want a blue spruce, I try to steer them away from that. I say, consider something like a Black Hill spruce or a white fir or any other thing out there other than blue spruce.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jack, for calling. Appreciate it. Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest. Mike is also with the Rotary Gardens in Janesville, Wisconsin. I wanted to mention that as well. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a gardening question, we hope you'll join in. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest Mike Maddox, UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And, Mike, we're going to talk with Vern in Appleton next. Vern, hello to you.
Hello. Thank you.
You bet.
I have a question about some raspberries. Now, they're wild. They're growing alongside of my deck.
Mm-hmm.
But they're wanting to take over the deck.
Mm-hmm.
And when would be the best time to prune them?
Are they annoying you now?
No, not really annoying, okay. But I'm going to have to, get them cut back.
Oh, raspberry questions. Let's see.
They're wild. But they produce some pretty good berries.
Yeah, yeah. You could probably give them this fall when things start to die back.
Okay.
And you thin out the older dead ones that you see. In the spring, anything that's long and lanky, cut back by a third or two-thirds.
Oh, okay.
And just kind of do general pruning like that on them to keep them in shape and in check.
Yeah, I thought it'd probably be either spring or fall. I didn't really think she'd do it in the minute. But other lady asked about the raspberries, and that triggered my remembering.
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, good
love
luck
your
with
program, both of you guys.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Vern. Mary in New Berlin. Let's try you again. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have a problem where about 8 years ago, I had two trees removed from my yard by a professional tree removal service and the stump removal as well. However, every year, I have to put quite a bit of dirt and replenish the hole because it keeps sinking every year.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if there was a quick fix to this because I don't appreciate planting grass over the top of this area on an annual basis.
Were those trees large trees when they were removed?
Yes,
yeah.
They were.
What you're probably doing is dealing with a large root system that's slowly decaying. And as it decays each year, it's the ground's giving away a little bit more and a little bit more, kind of like mine subsidence going on. You could probably just keep packing it with soil up top, or maybe pack it with a little bit more soil with the idea that it might settle, but who knows how much more root needs to go. I'm thinking if this was 8 years ago, you should be getting near the end of it. I'd be hoping you were, but that's what's going on. I don't think there is a quick fix to recommend other than, you know, instead of putting turf there each year, just put, you know, daylilies or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. There's so many great daylilies out there anyway.
Oh, I know, and mine are looking good right now, so that's why I suggested them.
mine have looked great. Now they're starting to, the flowering is going by the boards a bit, but man, they look beautiful.
Yeah.
They really look great all summer. Flossie in Chilton, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question about growing tomato plants near nightshade. I was trying to find some information about tomatoes and stumbled upon a bulletin board online that said you should not plant tomatoes near nightshade because it could cross-pollinate. And I'm just wondering if that's true, if that's something I have to worry about, because we actually have a lot of it.
Yeah, and I've got nightshade in my yard. I think this is a question that I would reserve for like Jim Nienhuis, if you can get an answer out of him. But they are in the same family, I believe.
Right, yeah.
And when you do look at things in the same family, there is always that possibility of cross-pollination. Whether or not this does happen or not, I don't know.
You don't know.
My recommendation is pull the nightshade. Get rid of it. It is not a good thing to have in your yard.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, I battle it too. So I'm always pulling it up, being careful to wash my hands and handle it carefully. So, no, I don't know of a good answer for that other than just try to remove the nightshade. And that, especially before it flowers.
Oh, yeah.
That'll help reduce any problems like that.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if there is cross-pollination, if there's anything that would get into those seeds that would be of an issue. Because that's where it would emerge if there was to be that kind of crossing.
Within the seed, but not the fruit itself?
No, because the fruit's going to be the actual tissue of the tomato plant.
Okay.
It's when you get the fusion of the genetic material between the two plants. It emerges in the seed.
So you think it'd be okay to eat the tomatoes this year, though?
Until I hear something otherwise, I don't know why there's a concern, because that's the first time I've heard that.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. You know, I was looking. We've always had this discussion about whether tomatoes are a fruit or a vegetable, and technically they're a fruit.
Yeah, botanically speaking, they're a fruit because they're the reproductive organ that produces a seed, but we call them a vegetable.
We call them a vegetable, and you know, that goes back to a U.S. Supreme Court ruling. There was a tariff back in the 1880s on vegetables, but not on fruit. And the government went after a guy who was bringing tomatoes in, and he claimed they were a fruit, so they weren't covered by the tariff. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that tomatoes were a vegetable because they were eaten as part of a regular meal and not as a dessert.
Yeah, I've heard of that definition before. I'm not sure. I think that's
well. How many horticulturists are on the Supreme Court, or ever have been?
Exactly. So no, I've heard that passed around before too. But
that was back in the 1880s. Oh, Paul in Cascade, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
My question is about green beans.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Some creature of the night ate every leaf off of my green bean crop.
Hmm. They left everything else just
they
zero?
They left the stems, just took the leaves.
And no other plants around the green beans were affected?
Some of the beets.
Some
they
of the beets.
They took the beet leaves again and left the stems.
Any tracks? Any droppings?
No.
Any calling cards left behind
no.
from what it is? Boy, when it's those creatures of the night, you know,
well,
coming from who knows where, it's hard to tell what it is.
It's been 2 weeks now, and some of the plants have begun to grow new leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Can I leave those and expect the crop?
Well,
there?
You can pull them up and expect no crop. I would say just go ahead and leave them. You know, just keep manage them, see what you can salvage from the situation. And then, boy, for nighttime pests, you know, because the last thing we want to do is stay in the garden all night. You just try to be vigilant as to what's going out there. I can't even guess based on the information you gave, whether it's even an insect or a mammal or anything.
I have a lot of rabbits in the yard.
Well, you know, whatever's the most of is easiest to blame.
Bed is raised up 18 inches off the ground.
Okay, yeah. And if there's a bunch of clean cuts on it, too, that would be a good sign of rabbit damage on those stems and that. And you know, I'd go out look for tracks. I can't even begin to tell you what to do to solve the problem until we know what the creature is.
Oh, a big fence.
Yeah, a big fence, yeah.
Big fence always does it.
Big fence, or could I replant new seeds today?
If you're doing it today, I would say go for it. It's getting a little late in the season for beans.
Yeah.
You may want to consider coming in with those more short-season, cooler crops. I don't know what the way the heat is today. I can't think of cool crops, but you can give it a try. See what you can salvage out of it all.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Terry in Menasha, we'll go to you next. Hi, Terry.
Hi. We did kind of an experiment this summer. We put in a row of 5 nanny berry trees in a very skinny section between our house and the neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm hoping you're familiar with them.
Mm-hmm.
They're a viburnum.
Mm-hmm.
The excavation of the holes was an enormous project because the ground was very, very compacted.
Yeah.
It turned out that the driveway that was on one edge of the hole had a layer of coal and what seemed like shale down in there.
Yeah.
And so it seems like they're going to grow out into one half of their hole because the driveway side is so compacted.
Yeah.
And they don't match. One of them on the end was a freebie tree because it wasn't in very good shape.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you can give me any advice on how to baby these trees. I'm also wondering if I was thinking of planting chamomile under them instead of putting mulch and what you thought of that.
I would think right at this point, mulch is probably going to be your best answer for babying them. If your ground's as diverse as what you've just described and hospitable for roots, whatever you can do to improve it would be best. Amending the soil isn't anything probably to be done at this point, nor is anything I usually recommend in the future.
I'm hoping we didn't make a mistake because we did amend the soil with some Menasha compost. It's available by the municipality.
Yeah.
We tried not to use too much because we heard we needed to make a transition to the hard stuff that was going to be at the edge of the hole, you know?
Yep.
So, and we made huge, wide holes.
Perfect. Okay, well, then sounds like you're on the right track. So what's done is done. We're not going to go back and undo anything. Let's talk about what we're going to do from this point on.
Okay.
I would recommend putting down a layer of wood chip mulch, something doubly shredded, hardwood bark. There's a lot of aesthetic things you can choose for your mulch. You pick one. Put it down about an inch or two, and try to make it as wide as you can in that area. The more you give that plant, the better. Because what it'll
do... Don't let it compete with grass, is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay.
The other thing that that mulch is going to do is, in addition to reduce the turf-grass competition, is it's going to help trap moisture underneath that area. And I'm betting that you're going to have some moisture issues in with the ground you described there. So this will help keep it more even keel, I would say, with your moisture levels. You're going to want to monitor your watering. So you get the mulch down, then monitor your watering. I'm going to say, in general, for when things need to be established, an inch of water a week. But if you're if you're going to find that soil maybe has a clay component that's going to hold a lot of moisture on you, you're actually going to want to physically go out there and kind of test it to see if it needs water.
The holes do drain well.
Okay, well then if you got good drainage, then definitely that 1 inch of water per week will be good because they like it wet with drainage, and that's a tough situation to find. Stick with the watering, stick with the mulching, and give it stay attentive on watering for the remainder of this year, and I would say through next year then too, to allow them to get established. Shy away from fertilizers at this point.
Okay.
That's going to promote green leafy growth. You turn to fertilizers if you start to notice any deficiency in the leaves, but off the top of my head with viburnums, that's not really an issue. And I would just keep with the watering and monitoring them, and that's going to be your best way of getting them to establish right now.
Okay. All right. Can I ask you one more question
sure.
about these? We had to be brutal on the roots because they were container grown.
Mm-hmm.
And they were terribly girdled.
Yep.
And we did a lot of cutting away.
Yep.
And the soil is settling.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a trick to settling the dirt down into the root ball?
Let's see. With their container grown and you have all that great compost that's surrounding the roots, usually when I do that, I try to tease some of that away and untangle some of those circling roots you find in a container grown stock. And try to spread those out into the planting hole to invite those roots out into the surrounding area. Then I try to backfill with soil native to the site, even if it's super lousy soil. I still try to use that because that's what those roots have to grow in. And once I get it, I try to work in that soil in with my hands to remove any large air pockets. I mulch it, and then I just give it a thorough watering.
Okay.
And it's through that process that I try to minimize the settling that'll occur.
Thank you so much.
Good luck with it.
Thanks a lot, Terry. Gene in Appleton, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Gene.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I would like to know, when is the best time of the year to transport asparagus roots?
I'm going to guess probably in the spring, because that's when I buy them and plant them then. you could probably get by with it now. I have to say I've never transplanted asparagus. I've just planted it new each year. Doing it now, you're late enough in the season. It might sacrifice a crop next year. But give it a shot.
I suppose it wouldn't help if I put a small fish in the bottom, too, huh?
I'm assuming it's a dead fish.
Oh, yeah.
I would say maybe a little light fertilizer could be suitable. But again, like with the raspberries, I'd rather you put a fish in it in the spring.
Would I expect that the old canes are going to die away and mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't see any life until next spring?
Correct. That's what I would assume.
And when I transplant them, just kind of cut the old canes off and just
clean them up.
Put a little marker where they are.
Yeah, I'd clean them up and mark
and
them.
Is there any depth below the surface that I should maintain?
Oh, yes, because when you do plant them, you'll want to keep those roots down, about 6-8 inches deep?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd still do with the plant them probably at the same depth that you harvest them from. When you plant the new crowns, you dig a whole trench about 6-8 inches deep, you put them in the hole, and then you slowly start to fill in that hole as they grow. At least that's what you're supposed to do. I mm-hmm. have to be honest, I didn't. And I still had asparagus. I've transplanted stuff every time of year, any time of year, and just as long as I water it, I seem to be okay.
Okay. So the thing is, if I want to transplant them, just go ahead and any time now and just...
Yeah. It's spring before the major growth would be better, but if you want to move them now, I mean...
Well, now they're easy to find.
They're at the end of the season. They're just going to go downhill from here. They've probably got a lot stored in their root system now. You'll probably have success in transplanting them as long as you water them.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They're plants. I mean,
give it a shot.
Give it a shot. And if they die, you've learned a lesson not to listen to me about asparagus.
And not to call back.
All right. Thanks, Gene. Yeah, thanks. But I think you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
As long as you water.
Water, yeah.
Beth Ann in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I've had a series of plants die in my yard in mm-hmm. one section, and I wondered if I described it, if maybe you could give me a little advice.
Okay. I can sure try.
Okay. Well, this spring I lost two Tinkerbell lilacs,
mm-hmm.
Euonymus firebush,
mm-hmm.
and a baby's breath, and they all seemed to die in the same way, where one part of the plant, the leaves would kind of curl up.
Verticillium wilt, probably.
Yeah, that's...
That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah, you can get that confirmed by taking up one of the plant's roots and all and dropping it off at the plant disease diagnostic clinic and have it tested. There is a small lab fee for it, but I think it's worth it before investing in any other kind of control or replacement.
Is there anything I can do... to prevent it, or
it's typically going to be a soil-borne fungus. So what you need to do is confirm whether or not you do have verticillium wilt, because it will stay in the soil, and you'll have to replant with things that will have resistance to it.
You can't replant with
with any of those plants, because if
lilacs
it is,
or whatever.
Yeah, if it's coming in with anything that's susceptible, it'll just get it again. But
okay.
Confirmations first. I'd spend the $20 to get it confirmed, and then we'll go from there.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah. Unfortunately, we had that along our fence line, and we lost lilac, and now we're losing some more lilacs right
along
the fence line.
And I was going to say, lilacs, I thought maybe it was just tree lilac that was supposed to be resistant, but there can be other things. The other thing, too, just as a note, if it is verticillium wilt, it'll be soil-borne, but it can also be spread by pruning shears. So if you are making a cut on any of these plants and you go cut on something else, it can be spread that way, too. So
yeah.
Disinfect your pruning tools. Between cuttings, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Laura in Viola, your turn. Hi, Laura.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I have this very unusual squash. I was working in Arizona this winter. I do travel nursing. Anyway, I was working this winter in Arizona, and this acquaintance that I met there, who was from Bosnia, gave me some seeds from a squash.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she could tell me what it was in her language, but she didn't know the equivalent. So I've been growing the squash, and now I finally got the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like a zucchini, but it's not long. It's got dark green stripes on it, and then it's like yellow and white-ish with green veins over it. It's sort of, they grow huge.
Yeah.
I've been looking it up on the internet, and the only thing that I could find equivalent was this something called a marrow squash,
yeah.
But it doesn't quite look like that either.
You're probably not going to find out what it actually is. If it's from a friend's seed source, there could be all sorts of parent into it. You were talking about a promiscuous plant here, who we don't know who the parents are now, and there can be some funny cross-pollination resulting into some unusual creatures emerging in your garden. So you're probably not going to find out what it is.
Well, it's very tasty.
It can still be a good squash. It's just not going to match anything that you're going to find in the garden catalogs. And you might find the progeny of this to be something totally unusual. You've got a living science experiment that's going to be kind of fun. Just keep going with it till one day they taste bad and don't save those seeds.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Good advice, I think. Frank in Adams County, it's your turn. Hi, Frank.
Good morning, sir.
Morning.
I have a problem.
Okay.
I'm a pretty good gardener. I've had my garden for a long time. I've never had any problems. I've raised squash and pumpkins and so forth. I got a beautiful thing out there now, and I walked out there, and some of the stuff was starting to wilt.
Mm-hmm.
I watered it yesterday. So I went to look at the root, and I've got that squash borer in there.
Yeah.
And it's completely, it's gone.
And when you break that vine open, it just makes your heart jump when that thing leaps out at you, doesn't it?
What, where does that originate first? What I want to find out is, where does it originate? How can I get it out of the soil? Because it's never been there before.
Well, It's not going to be in the soil. It may be in plant tissue residue that may be left there. You know, first thing you should do for battling this creature is crop rotation. Move those to a different location.
Well, yeah, I know, but I do that. I do that all the time, and I've never had any problem in that whole garden. But all of a sudden, it's not brought in by a moth or anything.
Yeah, it will be coming in. Oh boy, I forgot what type of insect. I'm thinking maybe a clear wing moth. I'm not an entomologist here. What I'm going to do is there is a fact sheet out there that's going to tell you everything you need. What you need to do is contact your county extension office and request to have them send you that our fact sheet on squash vine borer. And that's going to give you all the information you need for controlling it, including pesticide recommendations, when to apply, as well as some other things. I think Larry's trying to punch it up here on the computer so we can pull that info.
It's nothing that stays in the soil then, huh?
No, it's going to be coming in on plant residue that may be in the soil. That's why we're saying crops.
I'm going to take all that up and burn it.
Yeah, keep that going in here.
Yeah.
What you get there, Larry?
Well, let's see. I'm finding, I'll know in a minute or two, so hang on there. We'll have some information in a minute or two.
All right.
Thanks, Frank.
Yeah.
Do you want to give it over to the air? No, listen.
I'll definitely give it over the air. Just give a listen, and we'll tell you what the insect is.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. All right. We've got more callers online. Let's go to Russ in Green Bay. Hi, Russ.
Hi, guys.
Yep.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. See, I had a question. I transplanted, or I shouldn't say, I'm looking at fall transplanting some fruit trees that I've grafted, and I had really good success, but they're in my raised beds in my garden, and they're about 2 years old now. And if I take the root ball with a tree planter, is it okay to transplant in the fall as opposed to waiting for the spring?
For deciduous stuff, I really don't have a preference like that. I don't. I mean, somebody else might. I think you could be fine either way. If you're either time you transplant, the more root ball you move is always better. And make sure you come in with plenty of water for it to get those roots established and to help that out.
That's what I needed. Thank you.
Alrighty. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. So far, I've got that on the squash vine borer, the adult is a moth that looks like a wasp.
Yep.
Body is black, marked with orangish red. Hind legs are feathery with black and orange hairs. And
you're probably not seeing that out there. Yeah. It's going to come in at a certain time of the year, and when it's for degree days, and it's when we, if you can find that information there, Larry, that's the time we want to apply the appropriate insecticide onto the stems of the vines. I think pretty much the general stuff works. We'll still get some information out there.
Yep.
Yeah, this is one of those pests when people call in. I just got the fact sheet there. I memorize when I can look it up.
Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, works out of the Rotary Gardens in Janesville, Wisconsin. Our guest on Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Mike Maddox. Glad to have you listening in. If you have a question for Mike, give us a call. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And next up, Jerry in Milwaukee. Hi, Jerry.
Hello. Thanks for accepting my call.
Sure.
I have a 40-year-old magnolia tree in my front yard.
Mm-hmm.
It is just a beautiful tree, and I would like to reproduce it if I could, and I attempted to do something with some sort of starter material and cutting off a branch, and it didn't work. So
yep.
I don't know if there is any easy way to do something like that.
Oh, there is easy ways. It's just whether or not they're successful. What you're going to need to do is get some exact information on what is the best ways of propagating magnolia. There's some really great reference materials out there. I know on my own desk I have the textbook I used in college that lists pretty much every plant and tells you the best way of propagating it. You'll probably want to investigate to see whether or not with a magnolia of that size and age, whether or not it's best to do hardwood cuttings, softwood cuttings, or grafting of it, and what's the best material to use and what kind of plant growth regulator you need to apply. I think probably my suggestion for you is if you're in, I think you said Milwaukee, go to your Milwaukee County Extension office and talk to the master gardeners to see if they can help you determine some of that information. Because like I said, you need to figure out, you know, what type of cutting you need, what season of cutting you should make it. You should make that cutting, and as well as any like auxin you need to apply to it. Also, too, my advice for you is don't do one. Do as many as you can, because there is always failure when you're doing these things. Some are successful and others are not. And don't be discouraged from it.
Great.
All right.
Well, I really appreciate the information and direction.
Thank you very much for calling, Jerry. Appreciate it. Michael in Mount Horeb, on to you. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I have a very unusual growth on some about four-year-old grapevines. It's about the size, a little bit bigger than a golf ball. I can't tell whether or not it came from the grapes that have expanded into this growth or something else. It kind of looks like a little pineapple. It's a series of little fingers in a ball cluster, very odd-looking growth, and I'm wondering what that might be. Green in color,
yeah.
Slightly hairy.
On the stem, or on the fruit, on the leaves?
On the stems, on the actual vines, yeah.
Boy, actually, what it is, I'm not real sure. It sounds like you're describing to me an insect gall. I'm not a grape specialist. I'm sure any number of the specialists on campus could probably rattle it off to you right now. But what I can do is tell you what you can do is if you can take a digital picture of it, or if you can actually cut it off, get it into the Dane County Extension Office, and you can have it ID'd, or they actually have the capability where I don't right now to look it up for you on the computer. You can give the Dane County Office a phone call to get more information on that.
Very good. One more quick question.
Sure.
What causes blossom end rot on tomatoes?
Oh, that's the question I've been waiting for.
Yeah, that's, we've had a lot of
blossom end rot.
An easy question, right?
It's a common question. Easy one to try to answer. Blossom end rot is the equivalent to me of the first pancake off the griddle. It's a throwaway. It's that first tomato off the vine. There's just doesn't develop fully, and hopefully the ones that come after it are fine. Physiologically, people say it's a calcium deficiency, and that's true, where there's not enough calcium getting into the fruit to help it fully develop. But it may not mean there's a calcium deficiency where you're growing. It could be a watering issue. There may not be regular enough waterings, even enough waterings to be translocating the calcium up to that developing fruit. So blossom end rot, the short of it, it's typically the first fruit. Discard it if you want. The part that develops still is edible. Just cut out the black end, and the future fruit should be fine. If you want to avoid it, keep up with regular watering. Try to avoid having that area dry out. Keep it evenly moist. And if it persists from year to year and throughout the year and year to year, then you might want to start looking into the calcium deficiency part and come in with some sort of fertilizer that'll make up the deficiency.
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Diane in Abbotsford, your turn. Hi, Diane.
Good morning. I know everybody says it's easy to grow, but I have problems in some areas with my autumn joy sedum. It starts looking real limp, and then I can pull it out of the ground, and there are no or very shallow roots.
Mm-hmm. What kind of soil you got?
Clay.
Yeah. It's probably getting too wet.
Too wet. Okay.
It likes dry. It likes drainage. And if it's in too heavy or moist of a soil, those roots just don't form or they rot off. You need to keep your sedums in a place where they do receive drainage. Maybe a leaner type of soil. They don't need a lot of nutrients. If your sedums get really floppy and fall over, probably too much nitrogen. They like it kind of rough, kind of dry. They can be abused, and you're probably being too soft on yours.
How can I amend soil to?
Ooh, I typically try to point people in the direction of recognize the soil you have and plant what's appropriate for that soil. That's usually the easier way of doing it. Amending the soil can be a difficulty. If you're wanting Autumn Joy sedum, I'll tell you what I'm doing with some in mine is I'm growing it in pots with a sandier soil.
Okay.
I got a really large pot. I've got a sandier mix into it, and I've got it growing in there, and it looks kind of cool. You know, because it's one of those containers I could ignore.
Okay.
So get it out of the clay, get it somewhere it's drainage, or come up with creative ways of tackling it too.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Lisa and Nina, your turn now. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. We have a maple tree in our backyard.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the darker purple leaves,
mm-hmm.
and it's probably, 25 years old. And I noticed last year we started having ants traveling across our driveway, and they're traveling to this tree
yep.
from two doors down. And it's just continuous. And mm-hmm. I put down ant granulars and things like that, and it just does not even stop them.
Okay.
And I'm wondering why they're going after this tree.
Well, typically when you have ants living in your tree, those ants are doing you a favor and letting you know there's a nice hollow portion in which they're calling home.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. What you should do is get into the yellow pages, look up under tree services, and find someone to come out and inspect that tree for its stability and health.
Okay.
That, you know, it's not, this isn't really an ant problem, because you can treat all the ants all you want, but it won't make the tree better.
I understand. Yeah. But the tree is rotten.
I'm not going to say that. I said there could
it's
be the
weak.
Possibility of
okay.
it. You want to get that checked out.
Okay. That's what I Alrighty. Need to know. Thank
all
you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Lisa. And Tim in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hi, guys. I have a simple question about maple. I believe they're sugar maple street trees. And a year ago, one of them dropped its leaves 2 or 3 weeks before any of the others did.
Mm-hmm.
I was concerned, and I called the city arborist, and he suggested that the dryness, the climate dryness, has stressed the trees out. So I'm just wondering how often and how much to water some trees like that with the dry weather we have right now.
Yeah, I'll just say this. For a large mature tree, I don't think you're going to possibly overwater it at this point in time. The volume of water that the tree needs will actually break the checking account if we had to pay for all the water that needs to go onto it. So what I'm going to tell you is to water what you can. And the recommendation there is if you are going to water, go into the area of the drip line of the tree, you know, under the canopy, and apply 1 inch of water, because 1 inch of water will be enough to kind of percolate down the soil 8-10 inches where the roots are.
And when you say 1 inch, that means that's measured the same way rainfall is measured.
Exactly. Now, this is going to be a little trickier to do in a park row, but the way I do it in my backyard is, it looks like I'm watering the grass. I've got one of those kind of oscillating water sprinklers or a fan sprinkler going back and forth, back and forth.
That's what I have.
And then I set a container out there, think tuna can. other than, don't leave it out because it looks trashy in your yard. But,
right.
You set that tuna can out there in the path of the water. And when that fills up with water, that's going to be approximately 1 inch, and then you can stop watering.
And how frequently?
As often as I would like to say once a week.
Once a week.
At least once a week. You could probably stretch it to every 2 weeks and just go like 1.5 to 2 inches.
Okay.
Yeah. And that should be done with all our trees and shrubs right now. With the drought situation that we're in, keep them watered. And when it comes to our evergreens and those needles that are going to stay on our plants all winter long, keep them watering them to the fall. Otherwise, we're going to start to see winter burn on those plants next year.
I see. Okay. All right.
Good luck
Thank
with
you
that.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's go to Bob in Darlington next. Hi, Bob.
Hi, what a wonderful show.
Thank you.
I can tell you guys exactly how to get rid of the squash bug vine borer.
Oh, good. That saves us the effort from looking.
Yep, completely. And you'll never see the creature again if you follow my instructions.
You're not going to tell us to not grow squash there, are you?
What's that?
You're not going to tell us to not grow squash, right?
No. In fact, I've got squash out of my garden, pumpkins, and any mm-hmm. relatives of the squash it applies to, too.
Yep.
And what you do is when you plant your squash or your other allied plant family like that,
mm-hmm.
you plant directly with it either little red or icicle radishes.
Yeah.
And you never have the bug.
So you put the radishes around them.
Around the squash in your hill of your squash.
Why?
You'll never see it again. I've done it for 50 years.
Why is that? Why would that be the
case? Well, they probably hate the compounds that come out of the radishes. You know, radish is a very powerful, it has some powerful nutrients in it, doesn't it?
I tell you what, there is very little cost associated with giving that a try.
No, I'm going to try that in the community.
You should do that because, you know what, I've never had it fail. And I had a garden in when I lived up in Nina.
Yeah.
I had a garden when I lived in Oregon. And now I have a wonderful garden that is free of that nasty bug in Darlington.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Let me see, 47 years of gardening.
Yeah. That's a lot of gardening without seeing a squash bug.
I think an old gardener told me this. He said, Bob, and it doesn't make any difference if you plant just the little red, which I have this year, just little red ones. And then some years I put the icicle in and other radishes. It works identical the same way, and it knocks that bug for a loop.
Now, by chance, is there a year where you just say, okay, let me test this. I'm not going to plant it?
I've never done that.
No, I don't blame you.
No, yeah, if a good thing's working, why go back?
You know what? A good scientist would do that for a check and balance, though.
Yep. Well, and, you know, that might be something we start playing around with in the community gardens next year. Because
I should really try, because I had 100% success with it.
Yeah.
Well, in 47 years, that's a lot of success.
Yeah.
It is.
I don't know if it'll become an extension publication, but, you know, it's one of those things that just doesn't hurt to try.
No.
Yeah.
Try that in the community gardens next year.
We're planting radishes anyways. Boy, if we just stick them over there.
Why not? Hey, thanks a lot, Bob. Appreciate it very much. You heard it here. How to get rid of those squash vine borers.
It's worth a shot.
Plant radishes right around the plantings of the squash. And I'll tell you what, we've got more great information coming up next, right after our look at the news on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller with my guest, Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension horticulture educator and worker at the Rotary Gardens in Janesville, Wisconsin, as well. He gets around a lot, and pleased to have him along. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 with your questions, or at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions or comments. One of our listeners, was a Wisconsin native but now living in San Francisco, emailed us, Mike, and said, you know, there's the questions we've had about something eating the bean plants up, the leaves and that. This person in the email suggested that it was probably a woodchuck, and that could be a woodchuck, I suppose.
It could have been any number of things. Question is, how many beans can a woodchuck chuck?
I don't know. I don't know. But a woodchuck can certainly create lots of havoc in the garden. There's no doubt about it. And you know, one of the things that's really kind of cool now that we have at our disposal and are getting cheaper, and I've mentioned this a couple times on the program, you can buy these cameras now that you can install outside at night and outside, and it's a motion sensing camera. And
take a picture of it, and boom, you figure
out. I think
out.
You can get one of those now for $200 to $300.
Yeah.
And, you know, you install it, you get a picture of it, and it could really be kind of interesting, I think, to know, you know?
Yeah.
Sandy in Oak Creek, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Sandy. Thank you very much for calling.
Hi. I have 1,000 tomato plants because I'm a small farm, and they're mulched, and we obviously haven't had rain, so we don't have splash, but I'm losing them quickly. It's a leaf spot with a kind of bullseye, but it's also just quickly after that starts the whole branch turns brown. It started to happen about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
We do have heavy morning dew, but we don't overhead water. We use drip tape, and like I said, they're mulched. And we mulched them late, maybe 3 weeks ago, and this problem started last week.
Yeah. What I'm going to do is give you an answer that's going to be specific to you because you're a small commercial operation. And that's to contact our Fresh Market Vegetable Specialist to give you assistance. That'll be Karen Delahoe.
Good, I know Karen.
I would suggest, because your answer is going to be different than what the average homeowner can be.
But what do you think it is? I've never had it spread this fast. It's with you down a 100-foot row.
Yeah, with you've got such so many, you may have something in there that is going to be just specific to you. And again, just because of your situation, let's get you to the specialist to get something taken care of right away. Have you gotten a plant into the disease diagnostic lab?
No.
Plant and all, I'd pull it up, roots and all, and get that sent in for diagnosis, because you've got a little bit more riding on this than what the average homeowner does.
And where is that?
What county are you in again?
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee County, get it into your Milwaukee County office, and they can shoot it on over to the disease diagnostic lab on campus. So go to the extension office at the old Roosevelt School, I believe, with a plant in a bag with all your pertinent information on there, and they'll get you set up to get it mailed over there. And
okay.
I would do that today or next Monday.
Okay.
Because you want to get on this right away.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Good luck
with
that. All
right, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, good luck. Benita, your turn in Boscobel. Hi, Benita.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First is a comment about the lady that had the hanging basket petunia that was turning yellow.
Yeah.
When I purchased mine, I said, what can I do to prevent this? They told me, you need to water it once a week with acid-loving plant food and once a week with Miracle-Gro.
Yep.
And I have a very beautiful hanging basket yet.
Yeah. Yeah, it could always be that pH issue. I always forget about that in baskets.
My question is, we have a large hibiscus plant, and we were wondering if that can be split.
Yes, it can.
It can, okay. Mm-hmm. And when would be the time to do that?
I would do it in the spring.
In the spring?
Yes.
Okay. All right, because, yeah, it's blooming right now. Beautiful
now you're
flower.
Talking outdoor one, right? Yeah?
Yeah,
okay.
An outdoor one.
Yeah, I do it. Typically, the rule of thumb is for summer or late season blooming plants, you bloom them or divide them in the spring.
Okay.
Now, there may be some things different with the hibiscus. If you got access to a computer, I would definitely go to like a hibiscus society to see what they recommend for it. But the rule of thumb is
spring.
Spring.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Benita. Pat in Sturgeon Bay, thank you very much for calling. Hi.
Hi. About a year ago, we moved into a new house, and our landscaper put in one of those ornamental blue spruces that have the long stalk and then a ball on the top.
Oh, gotcha.
And,
yep.
Yeah, and when we first moved in, I thought it was the ugliest thing I've ever seen, and I kind of hoped it would die, but we paid a lot for it. So, but in the course of this year, I have gotten kind of attached to it now, so I kind of like it. But now it's starting to lose its shape. The ball is starting to look more elliptical, and so I'm wondering what is the best way to prune it. You know, it's almost like a bonsai, but I'm not sure how to go about cutting it. When I looked up on how to clip the spruce, it talked about cutting the candles, but not the rest of it.
No, and see, that's for pine. Yeah, spruce is actually pretty easy to do. You'll just need to shear it. And probably doing it in the spring will be better than now for the initial thing. You're going to want to start studying some Japanese garden design is what you want to look up on pruning. Because that's
it's
what you're getting.
Ball.
Yeah, you got an easy one then to practice on.
Yeah.
But that's kind of, you're going to want to look on pruning those spruces. And you should probably shear it. Oh, boy, I'm thinking, when does Jerry do it in our Japanese garden down at Rotary? June.
About June?
In some early June. Is
She's
when
in Sturgeon Bay.
Late June.
Late June in Sturgeon Bay.
Yeah. You can do that then. And just do a light shearing on it to start to get it in shape. It will slowly grow on you over time, but if you just want to keep it in shape, just a light shearing once in the beginning of the spring should be fine, and maybe every now and then one a little later in the summer.
Okay.
But not now. This is, I'm going to call this a little too late.
Yeah, no, now we just want to water everything.
Yep, that's right,
Pat. Keep it watered.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Helen in Monona, hi to you.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a beautiful, yellow, delicious apple tree. It's the on year with apples. It's loaded, but they're all like little walnuts.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure it's from lack of rain.
Mm-hmm.
Would it help now to put a hose on the roots and see if I can
keep them watered. Keep them watered. If I just heard our specialist this morning, Terrell Roper, talking about fruits, and he said if for some reason we were to get a lot of rain, we might see cracking.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, just for the tree's overall health, water them.
Yeah.
Again, that 1 inch of water per week is what we're wanting to shoot for.
Pardon me?
That 1 inch of water per week, like I talked about earlier to that one guy.
Okay.
Just keep them watered.
Yeah. Well, I'll I'm a senior citizen, and it's kind of hard for me to get the hose out there, but that will help, and they will grow, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm not a senior citizen. I leave my hose just laying out in the yard, so I just mow around it. But, yeah, you're going to want to do that to your fruit trees right now, especially uh-huh. with this drought. Just get them wet and keep them wet.
Okay. Yeah, right. Because it makes the most wonderful applesauce,
mm-hmm.
and now it's so loaded, you wouldn't believe, but they're just little tiny apples.
Yeah, well, for definitely, I don't know what's going to happen for the remainder of this year, if you're going to be able to salvage them or not, but uh-huh. definitely for the sake of the tree for next year and following years,
yeah.
water it.
See, now next year will be my off year. I don't get any apples every other
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot, Helen, for calling. Vivian in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Viv.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for being here. Yeah, I'm right on the shores of Green Bay, just a little bit north of Green Bay, where Door County starts. And I planted a cutout rose bush last year just to try it out on the bayside, and it worked out beautifully. So I got a couple other bushes and planted them in the spring. They seemed to do well for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started seeing these little ragged, nickel-shaped, almost, you know, very circular, nickel-shaped, ragged bites in the leaves. And then I kept seeing more and more. And I have no leaves left, nothing but canes. And occasionally a rose will grow. But, I mean, these bushes look practically dead. And somebody said something about a leaf-cutting bee.
Yeah.
But I don't see any bees or insects around these. I wish I could plant radishes.
Yeah, okay. But so you've got a mystery pest and probably not a woodchuck. And radishes probably won't take care of it.
Yeah,
but
right.
Whenever it gets to these type of problems, knowing what the critter is I'm just making a shot in the dark
yeah.
then for anything else. Do you treat the plant with any systemic?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, until we know what it is, you might have to resort to going to those just kind of general products for help for next year.
Yeah, I try not to use anything chemical, you know.
Yeah.
And everything organic. For example, the guy with the green bean problem, I was going to tell him about this, you know, rotten egg mixture
yeah.
stuff. That,
you know, at Rotary, we tried to do our roses in organic, and we just kept losing them.
Because
yeah. roses are just... They're demanding.
Yeah.
And unless you're growing something that's actually called carefree, like mm-hmm. that's the only one I grow, you are going to have to put a little bit of input into them. And, if you're wanting to control this organically, we got to figure out exactly what this pest
yeah,
is
right.
so we can get the exact organic product onto it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be a shot in the dark, and you can do like the synthetic and systemics
okay.
For general protection. And if you just leave it local to that plant, I mean, yeah, it's compromising your organic wishes, but
yeah.
it is protecting the plant until we can figure out more so on what the beast is.
Have you been yeah. out and taken a look at night to see if they're...
You know, I have. I've been out there, you know, a lot of times. Now, I don't live here. I'm here every weekend and sometimes for longer than that. But, you know, when I water, and it's in an area, I know they need it a little bit dry. I mean, the soil's right, and I'm
mm-hmm.
getting nice roses. It's
mm-hmm.
just the foliage,
yeah.
you know? And... So I
yeah, especially if you know, kind of doing the weekend warrior thing on
yeah.
them, that's going to be even harder to catch
yeah.
the problem. Because it could have been they, you know, if it is like a leaf-cutting bee, it's there through the day.
Yeah.
Through, you know, maybe it works Monday through Friday and
yeah,
you're
right.
there Saturday, Sunday. you're missing it. And,
yeah.
Boy.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of my
All
thoughts
right.
on it.
May I ask you what you think about those things? And I don't remember then. I think I have it at home. I think the product is called Liquid Fence or something, and
mm-hmm.
it is this rotten egg, and it smells terribly. And I want to say it's kept. I have lots of rabbits at home,
mm-hmm.
and they were always at my lettuce and my eggplant leaves and what have you. And I've been using this stuff after each time I water. You know.
Yep.
And it works really well. They've not done a thing.
I just attended a talk by David Drake, who's
yep.
talks about animal control, and he emphasized diversity and randomness when it comes to animal control, and it that will drive them away. And something like the sprays, you are that's good until they become used to it. So then you got to switch to something else. So those liquid fence type things, they do work, but until they the animal becomes accustomed to it.
Oh, I gotcha.
And then you got to mix it up with something else. So maybe in the meantime, as long as it's working, every now and then throw in a bar of soap.
Yeah.
Any other of those kind of stinky things? I like telling people to use predator urines.
I have done that, and my dog just goes crazy, and you know, my neighbors are like, "What's happening at the Craig house?" And I just have to tell them, you know.
Yeah, and all those type of products do work, but you just got to know how to use them, and that's keeping them mixed, keep up with the randomness and the diversity of it.
Right. All right. Well, thanks so much for your help,
and
guys.
Good luck with
thanks,
it.
Thanks, Viv. Thanks a lot for calling. All right, Ann and Ashland, we go to you next. Hi, Ann.
Hi there.
What can we do for you?
With the blossom end rot for on tomatoes that the gentleman called about earlier, my husband and I bought a spray from a hardware store. I believe it's called Rotaway. I'm not sure of the company that makes it. But we had a problem where blossom end rot, it hit every tomato that was showing up.
Yep.
And we sprayed it. You mix it with water, spray it in the cool of the evening, and it worked wonders. And it seemed to be a very good plant or product. It also says I think you can use it on melons and stuff like that too if you have that problem.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that probably one of the ingredients in there is going to be calcium.
It worked really well. Another thing too, we tried this year. We grew our tomato plants from seed, and we switched to heirloom varieties.
Yeah.
And so far, none of them have shown any indication that they want to blossom end rot at all.
Yeah. I've noticed that, too, with heirlooms.
Good tips. Thanks, Ann.
Thank you.
Yeah, what was the name of that product again?
I think it's Rotaway.
Rotaway. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Because I know if I didn't ask again, we'll be getting a lot of calls.
Yeah,
saying,
what was that? Yeah.
What was that again? So Rotaway. Okay. Mike in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I got a couple of questions here that may all be tied together. I'm not sure. I grow fig trees, I've got lemon trees, and I've got a loquat tree that I have in pots that I bring in the winter. And lemons I always used to get, and I'm not getting any lemons anymore, no blossoms, anything. I grew three of my plants from seed years ago, and I had bought two, and that's what I had used for seed, and I was always getting it. Now I get these little black or reddish brown like bumps on the leaves, even on the new leaves. I mean, it's leaving like crazy by having it outside. But I'll get like a kind of a honey type of affair on there. But these things seem to be coming even on the new leaves and on the stems on the lemon tree.
And so, and you say honey like stickiness?
It's sticky. It's clear, but it's sticky.
Sounds like aphids.
Okay, what do I do for that?
Wash the plant.
Just with that insecticidal soap?
Yeah, I'd go straight to the insecticidal soap and wash the plant thoroughly. It may need to be that washing may need to be repeated every
because
so often.
Because I'm not getting that would stop it from flowering too.
It could be stressing the plant to the point where it's not going to flower. You may have other issues going on here, but definitely that stickiness is
sounds
like aphids. And I would go with an insecticidal soap. Take it outside now, wash it down. Be sure to get the tops and bottoms of the leaves and all the little crevices you might find. There can be products you can apply, but, you know, and maybe it'd be worth it since they're not fruiting right now. As some sort of systemic, but I'd stick with just the washing right at this point.
Okay, now my fig tree, which I've had figs every year, this year didn't give me anything when I brought it outside. It's got, I transplanted it into a little bit bigger pot. It looked like it was starting to get root-bound, but I've had figs every year.
Except this year. And what's different this year than what's the last year?
Yeah.
Well,
you transplanted it
all the time.
You transplanted it.
Yeah.
So it
was thinking of putting it in the ground, too.
It's under a little stress.
Yeah.
Okay.
When it was in the smaller pot.
And that's going to force some fruiting to occur. You know, when plants are under stress, they're going to be a little more prolific with their fruiting. So I would just leave it as is, and let's see if we can
get fruits next year
or the following.
But okay, keep up don't put it in the ground.
No. If you, hey, you've had success before you started monkeying with it. Let's go back to what you were doing and let it get back onto that track.
All right.
Let's not screw up a good thing.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Bob in Madison, I believe it's your turn next. Hi, Bob.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good. Just got a question with the dry weather this year. I have some probably, a group of three lilac plants that are probably, about 15 years old, and they're right next to an adult lilac bunch. Mm-hmm. And they've been drying up. I have been watering them, and my neighbors have not been watering theirs, and theirs are drying up. I'm wondering, are they resilient? Will they go dormant and come back, or should I keep watering them?
Keep watering. Keep watering. They're under stress. There may be other issues going on with them, but the one that you have the most control over is moisture. Just keep them going to keep the stress at a minimum, and maybe consider coming in with some mulch to help with the situation, and let's assess it for next year.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
This dry weather is causing havoc everywhere, and you know, hindsight's going to be 20/20. We'll know what the results of it will be next year.
Yeah, it's the first time I've ever seen lilacs dry up.
Yeah, you might want to check into they can get a couple of problems. We had that call earlier about some verticillium wilt. There can be some bacterial blight. I will say, though, this has been mostly an insect year, not a disease year because of the way the weather is, but that doesn't mean the diseases aren't out there. If you are in Madison, you may want to just take one of those branches into the Dane County Extension Office and just have it looked at by the master gardeners to see if it's bacterial blight or any other critter you need to worry about.
All right.
Okay, well, thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot for calling. You know, we heard from Dan in Milwaukee about the problems with the leaves, the sticky, and he was saying he thought it was probably scale.
Yeah, it could be that, too.
It could be scale rather than
too.
He said bumps, too.
Yeah.
So scale, it could be scale.
Washing them that aren't going to be as easy to do. I'd still wash the plant. Just be on the safe side. If it is scale, the insecticidal soap is not going to take care of them unless you catch them at the crawler stage. And if that's the case, you need to find out what type of scale it is. And then definitely lean more towards those systemics.
Okay.
Yeah, scale. I always forget about that one.
Okay, thanks for calling in, Dan, with that. We get good calls like that a lot.
I like everybody's help. I like this conversation
stuff. Yeah, you bet. And Johanna in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Johanna.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. Mostly, I just want to make sure I'm doing the right thing. I'm trying to get rid of bindweed in a large perennial garden patch that's on right next to a school. So it is next to a field.
Is it bindweed or is it buckwheat?
No, it's definitely bindweed.
Okay.
Yeah. And the patch, it's about 100 by 30-foot patch of garden.
Mm-hmm.
It's got trees in it, and part of it was maintained, part of it wasn't. The part that wasn't was just completely taken over with, you know, every kind of weed.
Mm-hmm.
But the bindweed is particularly, I'm having trouble getting it under control.
Mm-hmm.
So I've resorted to Roundup mm-hmm. on just the leaves of the bindweed that's coming up in the cultivated areas where we've replanted.
Yep.
And I'm putting down carpet and other smothering type.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'm just going to, I don't know. I mean, it's just everywhere.
Well, without annihilating the entire garden, I think you're taking the best approach. That's
right.
How I would tackle it. I mean, we had bindweed in an area of the gardens at Rotary, and the whole thing was sprayed with glyphosate with Roundup, and we were starting over.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just the way to do it, that we chose to do it there. If you're trying to spot treat it like you are and preserve the other plants, you might be on the best way of the smothering and the spot treating like what you're doing.
So how many years can we, what I'm hoping is, you know, we keep doing this for you know, because we're replanting a huge mm-hmm. portion of this, 2 years. If we do this for 2 years or so and give the plants a chance to get more mature, will that
help? Yeah.
You know, I'd love to be able to tell you in 2 years you got it done, but I can't. I just don't know. There could be other circumstances there that are making this plant going to proliferate more than anything else. You may have a bad year with trying to control it. Just be diligent. Don't give up. Be persistent. And you're going to get it under control in the long run, but I just can't give you a time frame.
And thanks, Johanna. I appreciate your calling. Mike, thank you so much.
Hey, anytime.
It was a lot of fun. We'll have you back, and we'll do this again. And what's the day of the event at the Rotary Garden?
August 18th. It's a Saturday, 1 to 5. Come on down there. I'll be there. With staff will be there. Master Gardeners. Food, and stuff for kids. Tour the gardens, too, if you haven't
and
seen the garden.
And it's free. And it's free. Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, and who also works out of the Rotary Gardens in Janesville. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.